Well, hello everybody, Darren Saul here, your host of Saul's Searching, the Saul Recruitment Podcast, episode 20 with the fantastic Cam Elliott. How are you doing, Cam?
Good, thanks, Darren. Good to be here.
Thank you. Thanks for coming into the studio, or the virtual studio, as we say.
That's it, yes. The new world of remoteness.
Indeed. But for everybody out there, we're going to be chatting all about training and the fact that you can never stop training yourself and your team. So everybody's wondering, who is Cam? Well, Cameron Elliott is the founder, head coach, and facilitator of Elevate Corporate Training. He's a certified organizational coach and believes that a coach's role is to uncover the potential that lies within the counterpart he is coaching by helping others find the solutions to their problems rather than telling them the solutions to their problems. They become more empowered and are more likely to own their destiny. Cam is passionate about seeing people grow and has worked with a large range of professionals, from startups to Fortune 500 businesses. He has coached solopreneurs, whole executive teams, CEOs, and VPs. He brings a unique mix of business acumen, sales expertise, entrepreneurial mentality, and passion for life that inspires and teaches those around him to be successful, not only in their business, but in their life goals and dreams. So welcome, Cam Elliott.
Oh, couldn't have said it better myself, Darren.
Oh, well done. So,
thanks, Cam, for having me on.
My pleasure, man. Absolute pleasure. So, I mean, obviously you've done a lot, but I really want to tap into training because it's a fascinating subject.
Yep.
And it's, you know, an area that's growing. Probably, I think, one of the most fastest growing industries is coaching and training right now.
Yeah.
They say. Yeah. So I'd love to hear your backstory. How did you get into training? Tell us a bit about, you know, how this all came about.
Good question. So I, like so many things in life, I fell into this. I started out my career in media. I worked, my first ever job was selling alarms door to door. I was working for a company called FAI Home Security.
I remember them.
That was, I probably knocked on your door at one stage. You might have chased me out with a shotgun. that was a real learning curve. That was back in the late 90s. And it was my first real job. It was commission only role. And so you didn't get any money unless you sold an alarm, and we were selling $3,000 or $4,000 alarm systems to people who didn't have $3,000 or $4,000 worth of stuff in their house. So it was a bit of a soul destroying job, but I learned a lot about people and about communication and about connection from the 12 months that I spent doing that. And I went 2 months without selling a single alarm. Fortunately, I was living with my parents still, so I was able to do it. And then I eventually sold my first alarm in month three, which yielded $400, which at that stage was like more money than I'd seen. And by the sort of third and fourth month, I'd started to sell one a week, and then eventually was selling one a day. And I really found the groove within that business and understood it. And at that stage, my soul had been completely crushed and destroyed, and I didn't want to knock on another door. And I felt I'd got what I wanted out of that business and walked out of there. So I used that, and I've used that business and so many stories from that business I still use in training today, actually.
Wow, fantastic.
But I used it to get almost every job I ever had. There's so many different angles that you could use with it.
What do they call baptism by fire?
That was it. That was it. thrown in at the deep end, and off you go. But the team that I had were good. They trained as well. That was actually where I really got introduced to training, actually, was in that role. And so I did that. Then I moved on, went to Channel 7, worked in their sales department there, made my way up into a couple of different roles in that business, moved over to ACP magazines for a while, and then went to a business called Read Business Information, where I worked in their online division, which was called Catch.
Nice.
And I eventually became the sales director of that business and remained sales director for my last few years in corporate life.
Yep.
And then I left to go and start my own businesses, and I had a whole bunch of different ideas. I knew that I wanted to work for myself. I'd always had an entrepreneurial bent. And so I knew that I wanted to go and have my own businesses. And I actually started like three or four businesses, probably too many. One was a great business. It was in marketing automation. And this was in 2012, 2013. It made great money, but it bored the pants off me. But I wish I'd stayed with it. It'd be worth a fortune with that one by now. But then I also started a craft beer delivery service called Beer Days. That was a lot of fun. And that became my main business, actually, for 4 or 5 years. We had some early success with that. And then another business, which was called Balcony Farm, which was also a subscription business, helping people to start growing vegetables on their balconies.
Wow, a real entrepreneur.
13 as well. Yeah. So anyway, so I started all of those. And I knew that we wanted to start an adventure. And so we decided that we wanted to live in Bali.
Nice.
This is sort of 2013. We went and spent a month there in 2014, and then we moved over there full time in 2015.
Because I believe you're an avid surfer, aren't you?
I do. I love my surfing. So I definitely didn't pitch it to my wife that was why we were going.
Oh, by the way, they surf in Bali.
I didn't know. Oh, how lucky was that? Why are you taking 7 surfboards, Cam? Yeah, anyway. So we had that plan, and so that was part of, you know, that the setting up those particular businesses was that I wanted something that I could run from anywhere.
Yep.
And at that time, actually back in 2012, when I originally started up all of those businesses, I had a friend who was the training director at Catch while I was the sales director at that business. Gotcha. And she reached out to me and said, hey, I've moved to a new organization and we need someone to run sales training. So I went and joined her in that business as a consultant. I would do 4 days of running these courses, Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday. So 4 out of the 5 days a week.
Yeah.
And it was a paycheck. So that was good. Whereas most of the other businesses were obviously relying on me to bring in some sort of business.
Yep.
So I had that, and I stayed with them for like 3 years, 4 years. And even when I moved to Bali, I would fly back from Bali and I'd run a week's worth of training and then I would fly home. So it was quite a good little lifestyle and quite a good little injection of funds as well.
Absolutely. Well done.
Yep. And so, but I didn't expect to, but I really fell in love with being a trainer. I wasn't looking for it. It was, you know, I said I fell into it. That was it. It was an opportunity. I did it. I was nervous as hell the first time that I did it. You know, the first time I stood in front of a room, there was 16, 17, 18 people in that room.
Absolutely.
And me sitting there going, I don't really think I'm qualified to teach all these people anything. What do they call it? Imposter syndrome.
Yeah.
You feel like you're an imposter.
Yeah. And so what is it about training that you just fell in love with and that you still love today? What gets you out of bed in the morning, apart from surfing, about training? What is it about training?
Do you know, I still get nervous when I train people. It's definitely not like I was on that day.
Yeah.
But I still, the night before, a training session, a workshop, and I probably run anywhere from 1 workshop to 5 workshops a week.
Right.
You know, I still am thinking about that the night before and going over in my head what I want to do well and thinking about what could go wrong. And so there's still an element of pressure to perform really well and to be able to produce a product that is purely reliant on me.
Yep.
Because the training is actually not about me. So I need to clarify that. I'm a facilitator.
Yeah, as a facilitator.
Not a teacher.
Yeah.
It's the people in the room, but it's up to me to facilitate all of that so that I can create a product that's going to be really good for people. And at the end of the training session, at the end of the workshop, you know, often you get feedback, and we have feedback forms and all that sort of thing. Yeah. And it's rare that you're going to get bad feedback. You know, I always try and encourage some critical feedback from people, because I want to know, I want to get better. Yeah. But generally, there's somewhere between, oh yeah, okay, that was all right, and that was really amazing, and that you actually really helped me. And you know, I always like to think that there's probably, if there's 15 people in a room, there's two people who I've had a big impact on, you know, and then there's probably 10 who will take something away and put that into their life.
Yep.
And then there's probably two who thought I was an idiot. But you know, and obviously I'm focusing on trying to get as many into that top bucket as what I possibly can.
Absolutely.
And so that is what it was. And as time went on as well, I realized that I actually did have something to offer. You know, that imposter syndrome kind of goes away, and actually something, well, I've got some pretty good stories about things that I've done. I've got some experiences. I've made a ton of mistakes along the way. And so I'm actually able to share some of that experience, as well as the theory that sits behind whether I'm coaching, you know, communication skills or sales training or leadership. You know, there's lots of stuff that can be applied there.
And that's great. I mean, it's also, you know, an indicator that you care. You know, you really want to do a good job because you care about what you do. You're not just training for a paycheck. So
100%,
that's, you know, only, you know, it's all good. And that's why you should really have butterflies the night before or the morning before a training session, because that's if right. you didn't, you wouldn't care.
That's right. And you know, how many other jobs do you have?
Yeah.
You're kind of sitting there and you're kind of nervous about going to work the next day. You know, it's pretty rare.
Exactly.
You know, there's I don't want to pick out any particular industry.
Awesome.
I'm sure there's plenty of other people who are just waking up and they go through the motions.
So true.
And they get to their end of their day, they're just happy that they're on their way home. Yeah, Whereas I get to the end of a day of running workshops and I feel a buzz, or sometimes a little bit of disappointment, maybe. Yeah. Generally not. Like, you know, I feel like I've got them fairly well nailed now, but, you know, there's always something as well. And it's so easy to be super critical of yourself.
Yeah.
You know, and actually, I teach a lot about resilience and that sort of thing as well. And a big part of that is focusing on the positives and what you're doing well, etc. But then I leave a workshop where I've been training people at, and I think about the one time that I stuttered my words or got someone's name wrong or whatever it is. Yeah.
And one thing I've learned with training, I've done a bit of training just, you know, on the side, just in another area. But one thing I've learned is when you teach, you learn.
Yeah.
When you teach and you train, you articulate, you know, your knowledge and your experience so much better than if you didn't. So you really learn through that process.
Yeah. Yeah. There is a saying, it's learn, do, teach, isn't it?
Yeah.
And first you learn something, then you go away and you do it, and then next you teach. But, you know, there are workshops that I've written myself that I've delivered 40 or 50 times.
Yeah.
And I still learn something in the content that I've produced myself.
There you go.
Like after 49 goes.
Yep. Isn't that incredible?
Actually, this actually happens because of that, you know.
Yep.
there's a video that I often show that's about listening. It's a TED talk. It was run by a guy called William Ury. William Ury is like the master negotiator. He's the guy that the UN sends in when Chechnya and Russia are at each other's throats, right? So he's a really interesting guy. Wrote a book called Getting to Yes. And he's got a couple of TED Talks, but one of the ones that he does is about listening, the art of active listening.
Yeah.
And I must have seen that video 100 times. I really love it. It's a fantastic piece of commentary on the power of listening and how you can build relationships through listening better. But I still watch it and I still go, I hadn't picked up on what he meant by that. You know, so you do that teaching is, you know, you are learning. I think it's possibly, you know, the best form of learning that you can do is actually through teaching.
100%. So, I mean, let's get into training. I mean, obviously, you know, you guys, you've done a lot of training. You do a lot of different areas within training.
Yep.
But is there a particular time in someone's development of their career or in the progression of the growth of a company when training is more important than others? A bit of a loaded question, but I'd love to get your take on that.
Yeah, thanks. I don't know, just at the start and then just let it go. Yeah, look, you know, for us, I guess the best way to answer that would be to talk about what I see as the perfect relationship that I would have with a client.
Great.
And I have this conversation with most companies when they first engage us. We get a lot of companies coming through our website, and so we get leads through that, and I engage with clients through that or through referrals. They're really the kind of the two main ways. So when somebody comes on, they're coming to me and saying, hey Cam, like what's your training all about? How does it work? How much does it cost? All that sort of thing. And so I'll go and explain all of that. And then I explain what I see as being the perfect relationship with an external trainer. Because I can go into someone's office and they might or place of work, and they might have, let's say, a new team of salespeople. And so they want to upskill those salespeople. Maybe they book a 3-day workshop or 3 half-day workshop. And we go through all the sales essentials of how to understand client needs, customer needs, how to present well, how to negotiate, etc. I can go and do all of that. Our particular methodology, we also do coaching as a follow-up. It comes as part of the package. Nice. You don't get to choose if you do it or you don't, because we actually really believe it has such a big impact on the uptake of that training. And so I can come in and I can do all of that, and you will get some benefit out of it. There's no doubt about that, but they will learn, they'll feel like they're invested in. If they're new to the company, they're like, wow, this is a great company to come and work for. But the best companies, the best relationships that I have, and where I see the most growth and development happening, is when we're coming back in the third or the fourth time, and I walk in and I know the names of all of the people.
Yep.
And I understand what their strengths are and what their weaknesses are, because training isn't a box that you can tick and go, okay, fantastic, we've done that. Training is about ongoing development. And if you go back to the example that I just gave myself, that I'm watching a video that I've literally watched more than 50 times, and I'm still picking out things in that video. And sometimes, maybe even after the 30th time, I picked out something that was like, aha, that is an aha moment. So life is an ongoing learning festival. Our careers are an ongoing opportunity to learn and to grow and to develop. And so training is one of the ways that we can continue to do that. Certainly not the only way, but yeah.
And I can imagine, look, you've kind of answered it, but a lot of people would say, oh, you're a trainer, great. You know, we're doing fantastically well. Company's doing really well. Staff they're on fire. We don't need any training.
Yeah.
Oh, good.
Yeah.
What do you say to that?
I don't get them much, because normally people come to me and go, we've got a problem.
We need help.
but maybe that's why they've got that problem in the first place, isn't it? Is because they haven't developed their people. I've got a couple of organizations that I've now worked with since I started Elevate, which we've been running for 4.5 years now. And there's a couple of businesses that I've been working with that whole time. And they continue to perform at a high level with a great culture and effective in their operational roles.
Yep.
And they continue to invest in them. And they understand that training is essential to be able to maintain a certain level of performance.
Yep.
You know, if you don't, I'm trying to think which football teams are winning now. Actually, I saw Australia's been winning in the rugby a few times lately, and that we drew with the All Blacks recently, which is, as far as I'm concerned, is a win for us in Australia, drawing in New Zealand. The Wallabies don't sit back and go, we won a couple of times, that's it, I'm out of here, no more training for us.
Yeah, exactly, absolutely.
Yeah, Roger Federer's, I think Roger Federer trains something like 5 hours a day when he doesn't have a, that's 5 hours of court time a day when he's not playing a competition. And he's the best in the world, or second or third at the moment, but you know, and he's still doing it. So
true. I mean, and like I've spoken to a lot of business coaches, and they say the biggest issue with professionals and anyone really is that you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
So they always say that's why training and coaching and self-analysis is so important. And you need sometimes to get someone external to kind of open your eyes.
Yeah.
Because you get caught in your day-to-day rut and you might be doing the same thing that you've always done for the last 15 years. Yeah. Things are going well. And then all of a sudden you're at the danger of one day something's going to change. The world's going to change. The market's going to change. Behavior's going to change. And all of a sudden you don't have the tools.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's really, I really believe that. Like you have to continue to challenge yourself.
Yeah. And
you don't know what you don't know unless you seek those people to tell you what you're missing.
It's a really good point. Yeah. I just, and in fact, as part of what we do is a full discovery session with organizations before we start to work with them. Because people will normally come to us and they go, oh, Cam, we've got a problem with our culture. You know, there's, or we're going through some change at the moment and, you know, it's affecting a lot of people. Or, you know, we've got a problem with our sales reps because they're not bringing in enough deals or whatever it is. And actually, I then go away and do a discovery process, which is a series of interviews with key people as well as surveys within the organization to go and develop a program for them. But before I actually, you know, actually go and run those programs, I go back to the organization and say, okay, this is the brief that you gave me.
Yep.
This is what I uncovered in the discovery session. And in fact, there's also some other elements of this because, you know, if we're looking at the sales example, yes, there is a problem with bringing in deals, but actually when I have a look at your yield on your existing accounts, you know, it's decreasing over time, or when I compare that to your competitors, you know, you guys are underperforming. So there's actually other areas that are in there. And so you're right. Sometimes you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah, perfect example. And they go, wow, I didn't even know that was happening. Yep.
I have another analogy as well, which I practice meditation. I practice a type of meditation called transcendental meditation. You do 20 minutes in the morning, 20 minutes in the afternoon. It's become quite popular now. And I learned from a guy called Tim Brown. And I was having a conversation with Tim one day, and I was like, you know, and I went to Tim because I went to Tim because I was stressed out at the time. This is nearly 15 years ago, I think I started my meditation journey. And I went to Tim because I had, I needed that kind of help to kind of get me through a bit of a stressful time. And he said, in the end, he said, Cam, almost everybody that comes to me because there's something wrong. But actually the best is when I get somebody who doesn't necessarily have something wrong and or isn't trying to fix something, and they start meditating at that stage because they get the same trajectory, but they're starting from up here and going up rather than starting from way down here and going up. You know, it's the same. The trajectory is still the same. They're just starting at a higher place. So similar, very similar kind of feeling.
So true. Fascinating. You know, it really is. I mean, you know, definitely. This discussion probably can go on forever. But in terms
just try me.
Mind you, I've tried to do meditation courses myself, and I've never been able to continue. I love doing them. I've done a few.
Yeah.
I've never actually continued the daily practice. I've got to find a way to get into gear.
Do you know what I think is really good about Tim's Tim Brown meditation, just in case anyone's wondering,
yeah, sure.
Is that they're reassuringly expensive.
Right.
And so it was about $1,000 to do a meditation course, and you can do a meditation course for free pretty much anywhere.
Yeah, community college.
But when you pay $1,000, you're more likely to actually stick with it. So
very true. I like that. I like that. That's really good.
Yeah.
Same could probably say about training, but anyway, we'll leave that to later.
Yeah, on. Well.
So Cam, tell us a bit more about Elevate and about the team and exactly what type of training services you provide.
Yeah, sure. So we've got, there's a few people who helped me with the facilitation. And so they've all come from a commercial background. It's a really big difference that we see is that everyone who is teaching has done in the past. Yeah. And so anyone who is who's consulting to the business has that kind of experience. I'd say that we're, the business is called Elevate Corporate Training, but we're the least corporate training business that I know of. I've actually been training today. You can see I'm in my t-shirt. I don't wear a tie. I live in Byron Bay, I've moved here from Bali. Yeah.
I'm in the wrong business, I think.
although mind you, yeah, the recruitment business is very much work from where you want. So, I used to do a lot of travel as well, but now that COVID is here, that everything's moved remote, which is was very hard on the business at first, but is coming up pretty good at the moment. So anyway, so to answer the question, so that's the kind of people that we are. We try and attract businesses that are like that as well. If you want more traditional old school training, that's fine, go somewhere else. We try and be as fresh as we can. We do a lot of really cool video content. We do lots of face-to-face training. We do a lot of one-on-one coaching follow-ups, all that sort of thing. We try and keep it as fresh as we possibly can and engaging and interesting. So because really our customers at the end of the day are the people that are in the training. They might not be the people that are signing off on the business. I'm normally dealing with an HR director or a sales director or a CEO or a business owner. But at the end of the day, it's got to be the people in the room that feel like they're getting value for their time that they're investing.
I love that.
Whether that be, 3-2 hour online workshops or 1 6-hour face-to-face workshop. So we try really hard to keep that interesting and engaging. We have a four-step process that we use to be able to design and deliver the training in a way that ensures that there's actually going to be positive changes that are implemented as a result of the training. We used to work for this other business, and the thing that would always grind me was that I never knew if the training that we had been through, the workshops that we had facilitated, whether or not any of that was sticking and it was being taken and actually put into action. And so when I started this business, we developed this methodology for designing and delivering the training with the one intent, which we always kept as our bar of excellence, was about how do we make sure that this actually leads to positive change.
Right.
So we designed this, it's called Discover, Design, Deliver and Coach, the four steps. And I've already hinted at some of that, but the Discover process essentially is that what we discussed before, where we conduct a series of interviews, not just with the CEO, not just with the sales director, but with the sales reps that are going to be in the sales training, or with the marketing managers who are going to be in the leadership training program. So we go and do that, we come away, and then we design a program that's based off the learnings that we took out of the discovery phase. Right. And this is making it way more unique and customized to that particular business. And so we're able to deliver something that the people in the room are actually going to go, oh, okay, I do care about this, because I was actually the one who told you that this is what I cared about and what we needed to work on,
right,
as opposed to it coming from top down. And then the third stage is deliver, which, for us used to be all face-to-face, is now probably 80% delivered online. Wow. And we try and make those workshops really interactive. We've actually, with all the remote stuff we're doing now, it's just a little bit of a side topic, but I think we're getting feedback from customers at the moment that are saying they're enjoying the remote workshops and they feel like they're getting more benefit out of it than what they were out of the face-to-face stuff. And I think that the reason behind it is we normally, our workshops are 5 or 6 hours long, and then we have the coaching session after, and that's effective. But a lot of the remote sessions now, we're doing 2-hour blocks because it's too long. You just can't do 6 hours on Zoom, you know. So even 2 hours is a real stretch on the brain. So we'll do 3 2-hour or 3 90-minute sessions. And we do one and then they go away for a week. And then we do another one, they go away for even do a third one. And the thing that I like about it, we call the learn, do, teach technique, which is you kind of learn something and in that first 2-hour block, then you go away and you actually put it into action. And then, so it's not learn, do, teach, it's learn, do, share. So they learn something, then they go away and they do it for the week. And then they come back and at the start of the next workshop, they all share their experiences in putting that into practice. So it's been a real shift. And everyone talks about, okay, what's going to be the silver lining of COVID?
Yeah.
And I think that's one of the ones for us is that we've been forced into changing the way that we can deliver training.
Yep.
And it could even be more beneficial than what the old way was.
I love it. I love stories like that. It makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So anyway, so let me quickly finish. So we do that. That's the stage 3 is deliver. And then the stage 4 is coach. And we feel this is what really separates us from a lot of other training organizations that are out there is that most people, you know, you finish your workshops, maybe you do an action plan that says, these are the things that I commit to doing. But then that, you know, cross your fingers, hope that all goes into play. We actually have one-on-one coaching sessions with every single person that attended that training. So if there's 15 people that attended training, we do 15 one-on-one coaching sessions, which are conducted over teleconference so that they can go away. They spend 2 weeks going and doing, and then they share with us how that went and we can coach them on how to improve it or see what went well. And it does two things. One is it allows them that time to take something theoretical and put it into practice, and then come back for a coaching session on it. The other thing is that they know that I'm going to ask them how they went. Yeah. So they're actually much more likely they've got someone to hold them to account. So that's really a key part of it.
That's awesome. And it also forces them to kind of put that into practice over the first couple of weeks before the call. And before they know it, it's become a habit.
That's right. That's right. And then you just have better conversations as well. You know, people come to me and so we do a lot of work on giving and receiving feedback. I just think it's one of my favorite things to teach is trying to implement a culture within an organization where people can give and receive feedback without their ego getting in the way, without feeling like you're going to upset somebody, without taking it all feedback as being an assault at your own, you know, person as or human being. And then also developing a culture where people ask for feedback, because feedback is this epic tool for growth. You know, we have all these people around us who have experience that is slightly different from ours, but are generally kind of in the same field as us. But we don't necessarily go and ask them, okay, how would you do this? Or how could I improve this particular process? Or, you know, this is how I communicate with my staff. Like, what can I do to make that better? And so when we train giving and receiving feedback for companies, I always set a 2-week challenge. And part of that 2-week challenge is that they have to go away and ask 5 people for feedback. They have to document it and say, you know, this is what I asked and this is the feedback that I got. And I would say I probably run maybe 300 coaching sessions, one-on-one coaching sessions with people who've been through that course.
Yep.
And I reckon there's at least 20 or 30 of them who've cried when I've had that coaching session with them because they've heard something about themselves. And I mean, cried in a good way. Yeah. In a bad way. You know, like people who have gone and asked someone for feedback on something. And they've really put themselves out there. It takes a bit of courage to go and ask for feedback. And they've put themselves out there. And then that person has connected with them and engaged with them in a way that they didn't know was possible, that they didn't think that they had that kind of relationship. You know, someone who sat next to them for 3 years. Wow. And they've never really kind of connected. And then all of a sudden they go and ask someone for feedback.
Yep.
That idea of putting that whole thing into practice, then coming back and having a coaching session on it, makes it really come to life.
And I love that because, you know, I really believe that you can get inspiration. Sometimes the best inspiration from other people that work in areas that you don't work in as well. So when you ask people for feedback that might not even be in your area, in the same area, it's amazing what you learn and what you can what you can adapt and bring into your own business.
It's a really, great point, Darren. I mean, it doesn't have to be someone who does that. You know, I can be talking about, a workshop that I ran, and I can go home to my wife, yep, who doesn't facilitate workshops, and I can explain something that happened, yep, and ask her for feedback on how that went. And yep, I'm going to get her perspective on that. And it's going to be different to what my perspective is. And the great thing about feedback is that I get to choose what I do with it. So if I agree with her, I can go, okay, yes, great, I'm going to try and do that next time. If I don't, then I don't have to.
So
getting feedback from as many different areas as well is really key to using it as a tool for growth.
Beautiful. And just to be clear, just for the audience out there, so you provide training in sales, which particular areas do people want to
Thanks for drawing me back into the question. So we specialize in, really, it's sales, communication, leadership, and recruitment. So we provide training to sales teams. So that could be to sales reps, could be to sales managers, sales directors. That whole revenue generating area of the business is, we definitely have a lot of strengths in those areas, because most facilitators, all but one, have come up through sales and then moved into management roles. Then the second is really about communication skills, which I kind of think about as, how do we improve our culture?
Yeah.
And so that's anything from, you know, workshops on giving and receiving feedback, to having difficult conversations, to building resilience, you know, all these different things that we can do to improve the way we communicate, the way we work together, change management, teamwork, all those sorts of things. Then sort of more specific leadership and management essential style programs as well. And then also we work with a lot of recruiting companies to be able to, either from a leadership perspective or from a consultant's perspective, which is about bringing on an understanding of what are some of the best practices that recruiters can use in order to be able to grow their own desk. We like to think of recruitment as a recruiter. You have your own business.
Definitely.
And your customers are your clients, and your product is the people that you put forward for those roles. And so how do you become the managing director of that business and grow and develop all of that? So that's kind of the basis that we use for that program.
Awesome. Fantastic. And just to kind of draw out one or two maybe stories or anecdotes, because, you know, everybody loves storytelling, and we learn through stories. So I'm just wondering, of course, being extremely confidential, you know, have you got any great stories or little anecdotes from successful training engagements for companies when, you know, after a certain amount of time, they came back and said, wow, Cam, our culture's incredible. You've just increased our revenue by so much. And you just want to get some, you know, a bit of a story for us. For some past, maybe a case.
Yeah. We can jump on the website and have a read of a few, actually. So, not to plug it too hard, but you go on to the. I find it easier having other people say this stuff than say it myself. So it's the Australian way, isn't it? But yeah, definitely. I mean, you know, I'm just trying to think of, you know, real examples. And we work. There's one organisation that we've worked with for 4 years now. They're called the Tax Institute of Australia. They're a members body, and I've had several occasions where people from the organisation, both from the leadership team as well as individuals who are in that organisation that have been through a program. They were one of the first companies that I ran our giving and receiving program for.
Okay.
And the feedback that we got from them was that it had a huge shift in the culture of their organization, that they were coming out of an old style of business and moving into, this is going back 3-4 years now, and they were making that transition into a more modern business, moving away from a siloed organization with different silos from different departments. And we were able to use that. And so I got feedback from, operational people within that business that similar to the story that I just told you before, right up to the CEO who said that it was just a noticeable shift in the way that they were operating within weeks after running that program.
Fantastic. Well done. And for everybody out there, feel free to jump on the website and read some of the other stories and testimonials. I'm sure there's plenty.
Yeah. Thank you.
But Cam, it's been an absolute pleasure. Really appreciate you coming on the show and really delving into this topic because, you know, I've always been fascinated by training and coaching and the coaching philosophy and the nuances behind that whole process.
Yeah.
So if people want to get in touch with you, just the website, is that the best way?
www.elevatecorporatetraining.com.au. We tried to pick the longest URL in Australia, so I think we're nearly there. It was we did it for SEO purposes, right. Hence the reason that we have the word corporate in a very non-corporate training program. So www.elevatecorporatetraining.com.au and there's lots of forms that you can fill in there or other ways to contact us through that website.
And Cam's on LinkedIn, of course, as well.
I think it's just LinkedIn, whatever, /.
I'll put those links in the show notes for you, for everybody.
Terrific.
Awesome. So, Cam, really appreciate you coming on the show. I always like to ask you one more question before I leave, just a real easy one. If people want to think about training or just self-development in general, what's one little tip that you can give them? What could we leave them with to really get them in that mood, get them thinking in that direction? Anything that you can?
Yeah, I can. The number one thing that I would say, and I touched on this slightly before, is to listen better.
Oh, I like it. Nice.
We've got two ears and we've got one mouth. I know this is supposed to be a short answer, but I'm going to give you a longer one.
Go for it.
And that is that most people think that active listening, so I use the term active listening. If I ask you what is active listening, you're probably going to say something like it's nodding and
saying yes every couple of words.
Yeah, say yes every now and then, maybe repeat back what somebody else has said to you. But the thing is that I can be listening to you or I can be hearing you talk and I can nod. Yep. And I can be thinking about going for a surf later on.
So true.
Or I can even repeat back something that you said to me and I haven't really absorbed it, you know.
You just got a good memory, you just paraphrase.
So, yeah, exactly. So I would say that is not really what active listening is. And most of us probably aren't misintentioned. We are probably trying to understand and whatever. We might not be thinking about going for a swim later. But we are probably thinking about what we're going to say next.
Yep, so true.
And that is a really key difference. So active listening, to me, the definition that I like of active listening is listening with the intent to understand.
Love it.
Opposite is listening with the intent to respond.
Perfect.
And so the art is to listen with the intent to understand, and it is an art because we are not born to do that. We're born to think about not looking stupid, so we want to get the right response, or we want to be funny, so we're thinking about what we're going to say. Listening with the intent to understand, and there is no faster way to build a connection with someone than to help them feel understood.
Perfect.
So if you can practice that, listening with the intent to understand, you will build stronger relationships. You will build rapport quicker with people than any other way that I know how. So that's my tip.
Very wise words there. I love it. Absolutely.
I got a couple.
Well, Cam, thanks once again. Really appreciate you coming on the show.
Cheers, Darren.
I'm going to put all the links in the show notes. And I certainly will be re-listening to this and re-watching this because it was a fantastic episode. Hope everybody got a lot out of it. And we'll see you very, very soon for another episode. Bye for now. Thanks again, Cam.
Yeah, thanks, Darren. Appreciate it.